clinique, a full, not even the travel size, like a full bottle. I was like, oh, wait a minute.
Clinique.
So from since then, that bag has been to every single appointment, and just looking through it now, I'm like, okay.
You know what I got?
What'd you get?
I got a leather portfolio for an interview in the future or whatever. And a calendar. And a pen. There was a pen. It came with a pen. Like a writing utensil.
Welcome back to Everything After, a podcast about survival, motherhood, and finding radical joy in the aftermath of life's biggest challenges. I'm Chantal.
And I'm Tiffany. If you're joining us for the first time, last week we shared our diagnosis stories, how we each learned we'd had cancer while pregnant, and the shock that followed.
Today, we're diving into what came next, treatment. When most people begin cancer treatment, their only concern is fighting the disease. But for us, every decision was complicated by the precious life growing inside.
Exactly. And it was never just about survival. It was about two survivals intertwined. Every medication, every procedure, every choice came with twice the consideration.
We've both said that this period felt like living in an impossible paradox. Our bodies were simultaneously creating life and fighting for survival.
So today, we're going to share what that looked like. The hard choices, the unexpected blessings, and how we navigated treatment while pregnant. So Shan, let's start. It's treatment. It's time for our treatment plans. Let's start with the moment that your doctors presented your treatment options. What was that conversation like knowing you were pregnant? How did that go?
That first conversation was wild. I think I had the oncologist in there, the breast care nurse, and I think a few student doctors in there as well. So I'm like, okay, not the whole class just out here sitting in on my case. All right, is this Grey's Anatomy or am I at Memorial Sloan or like what's going on? It was just insane. So yeah, that was quite a heavy appointment, just, you know, going back through family history and how far along I was in the pregnancy, and drew like so much blood that day because it needed to go off for genetic testing, and then the rest needed to go off in preparation for chemo. But the treatment plan that they gave was it was full on. And I think I just wasn't expecting so much whilst being pregnant. I just thought that they'd just be like, okay, well, we'll just give you a little bit and see how that goes, because obviously you're pregnant, and then after you have the baby, then you'll get the rest of what it is. Mm-hmm. But I got my little paper right here, and I'll tell you exactly.
The receipts.
Okay. So they said, first thing will be chemotherapy, and I will have FEC, so FEC, and I remember the drugs. It was Fluoxetine, Epirubicin, and cyclosporine. So that was a combination of the three drugs, and I had, did I have three or four rounds of that? I'm not sure how many I had of that. And that was through my PIC line that they gave me. And then I had three or four rounds, I don't remember, of docetaxel. Because I know I had three rounds altogether.
Is that the Red Devil?
The Epirubicin is.
Okay. I've heard about the Red Devil.
That's the one where, listen, that one, aptly named, that one. I remember, that one was just terrible. And the same with docetaxel as well. It was just still terrible just to go through that process, you know, when it gets to like the day 4 or 5, your neutrophils will be low, so you're going to be feeling they just made it out like, oh, you'll just be feeling like a little bit crappy, you know, like a cold, but like a really bad cold kind of
lies.
Oh, okay, all right, you know, I've had colds before, whatever. I woke up and I was like, what fresh hell is this that I've just walked into? Terrible. And then they told me about the receptors, so what my cancer was feeding off, basically. So I'm triple positive, so it was loving the estrogen in my body. HER2 positive, So they needed to give me targeted treatment. It was going to be Kadcyla, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
But then they ended up giving me Enhertu instead.
Okay.
And then that was after I had Esme. And then they said, you will also possibly need radiotherapy. This would happen following surgery if this is appropriate. And yes, it was appropriate because guess what happened? We had the chemo. Then we gave birth. Then we had the surgery. Then the surgery showed evidence of disease. Then a biopsy from the other breast showed you have cancer again. So then we had chemo again. So then we had surgery again. And then finally we got to radiotherapy. So yes, my treatment plan was not meant to be as long as it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the oncologist saying, oh, well, you know, we're just figuring it out as we go along with you. Like this has never happened before. I'm like,
wait, what?
Okay, cool.
I don't want to hear that.
Exactly.
Why would you say that loud?
Oh, no. So when I got that second cancer diagnosis, they were like, oh, yeah, well, you know, oh, this has never happened before. It never usually happens like this, you know.
So how did they, like, what was their approach to, like, balancing the risk? Because if you weren't just, like, a normal patient that came in there with breast cancer, like, or you were also pregnant with a baby. It seems like they were kind of making it up as they went along.
Yes.
How did you have to advocate for yourself? Like, was it really emotional, like in those early like planning sessions of what the treatment was going to be? Because if I have the timeline correct, it sounds like you had to start chemo right away. And then you had surgery and then you had to have chemo. Well, no, surgery and then delivery or chemo, more chemo. Run it back.
Chemo, give birth, surgery, chemo.
Got it.
Surgery, radiotherapy.
Okay. So, yeah. Like, it sounds like they put you on kind of all the chemo drugs they would put, like, anybody else who had breast cancer on. So, did they explain that to you in terms of, like, the impact of your pregnancy?
I think I just remember it just being, like, a brief conversation of the oncologist just saying, oh, well, you know, you should be fine because the toxins from chemo shouldn't pass through the placenta and the baby should be okay. Okay, cool. Fine. So that was just a brief conversation with him at that point. It wasn't until, I don't really know what to call her. What would she be? So when I had my checkup, like with the midwife, I think she was like a consultant maybe. So she was a little bit more like, okay, so, you know, we're going to do a scan every 3 weeks and have a checkup and they measured like how baby's growing, compared that with the scan from 3 weeks before. And they're just like, okay, you know, if there's any changes, then we'll let you know, like pretty much there and then really. So it was always a scan. Then I saw her, we'll go over the notes, what's coming up next. So that was a little bit more in depth on her side. But oncology, they were just like, we'll just
give you a drug. We're doing it live, girl.
Yeah, we'll just hope for the best, kind of. You let us know if it's working. You tell us. We'll put you on this planet. You tell us if it's working.
So they had like no limitations.
No. They were just like, we're going to give you this and we'll see. We'll see if it works, basically.
That's so fascinating to me because the experiences are similar.
Mm-mm-mm.
But also so different. You know, we obviously have different cancers. Mm-hmm. You know, mine was a gynecological cancer. And so it made a difference, I guess, in how they were treating it, to where I felt like my treatment was very much revolved around the baby. My very first appointment, even before we found out it was cancer, it was like, the cyst is concerning. It looks like it could be malignant. But, you know, I remember my oncologist telling me, like, we can get you into surgery next week, remove your ovary, remove your fallopian tube, do one large biopsy and figure it out. It could be good news. Or we could just leave it in there and we'll take it out when we'll do a cesarean and I'll be in there and I'll take it out and then we'll biopsy it from there. And I just knew, like, I didn't want to wait to do that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, from that very first surgery, which basically ended up being like my biopsy, it all had to be just like timed perfectly with the pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, we have to time every single treatment so that we can get you to 35 weeks because we want you, but we want to give you a break. So like we want to give you 3 treatments first, and then we want to give you at least a 3-week cycle to recover. And then we want to make sure that 3-week cycle ends like right at when you're supposed to deliver at 35 weeks. And so it was very, it's wild hearing you talk about like, we'll just see, like, yeah, you know, if you like, we're just going to throw spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks. Because mine, there was never a moment for me where I felt like I had to ask about the baby, because the baby was like always top of mind. Like it was like, you are this vessel carrying this baby. And like, we are. Yes, we want to save you too, but like, it's the baby. Like he was always at the forefront. And my case, actually, it went before a tumor board. So it was like my oncologist, my perinatologist. And then it was like just a few other like nurses and doctors. And he brought it before that board like multiple times. And so he was like, I want to make sure that we are getting kind of the right plan in place. And so I ended up having to do... I did like a free conference with the infusion center.
Okay.
And so that was like the Friday before my treatment date, before my first treatment started. And I remember I went there and the nurse who ended up, she was never on like any of my chemo days, but like anytime she saw me, she'd be like, "Hey girl, how you doing? Like, you doing all right?" Like, she just became like such a familiar face. And like the universe like knew it, that's exactly what I needed that day.
Yeah.
Because I walked in there and she was just like, girl. I was like, "I know, girl." I know. I was like, "I know."
Yeah.
And she took my hand and she was just like, "It's going to be okay." She's like, "It's all going to be okay. It's going to be okay." And she was like, "We're going to go through this super slow, because I want you to understand everything that's about to happen." And so she walked me through the plan, which ended up being, I would get my pre-meds, I would get the Benadryl, I would get the steroid, and then I would do the Taxol and the carboplatin. And she was just like, "Unfortunately, this is all we can give you." So my final treatment plan was 3 rounds of chemo before I gave birth. I'd get that 3 weeks off, and then I would deliver via cesarean hysterectomy, and then I would do 3 more rounds post-delivery. So I had like a 2-week-ish break postpartum, if that, before they were like, "Time to saddle up again, girl."
Time to pick you up by your bootstraps, girl. Come on. Come on.
But yeah, it was a very, very intentional, regimented plan. And I did feel like my oncology team like really kept in mind of just how I was in that sweet spot.
Why did they say they would get you to 35 weeks and like no more than that? Was it just because they needed to put you on chemo after that?
I can't remember, but it was around in that window where it's like, it's safe for them to take the baby out. They can be confident that the baby is grown enough. And if they need some more time in the NICU, that's fine. But it was also because they couldn't fully stage me until they removed, they took everything because he couldn't see behind the baby. So he was like, "I can't actually stage you until we get that baby out of there." And so that's also why they wanted to take him as soon as possible. Because by the time I was finished with the first 3 cycles, like my CA125 number, the cancer blood marker for ovarian cancer, that number had already like gone down by a lot. And so he was like, it seems like it's working. It seems like your body's responding to it well. And so I wish I would have asked more questions because I was just like, get me out of this matrix. Like, get me out of this timeline. But yeah, 35 weeks was like, that was like the sweet spot within this time frame, and that it kind of would help them move things along. All right. So let's talk about how treatment actually began, like those first steps into the unknown.
Yes. Well, for me, I remember April the 17th, I went to have like a visit on East Block. Shout out East Block. Hey.
East Block. East Block. East Block.
he's black. So I went to have like a visit and, you know, a show around of where I'd be and what kind of things will happen. I remember, I don't know whether I want to say her name or not. Hopefully by, you know, the magic of the universe, she'll be able to see this.
Yes.
She knows who she is. But the first nurse that I ever met, and we were just going through like the story and, you know, what's going to happen. And she gave me my meds that I needed to take beforehand. So I need, what's it? And whatever it was. And then she was like, okay, you know, I'm going to give you your medication now for what you need after chemo. I'm like, okay, cool, fine. So she's giving that to me now. And she's like, oh, you're on the good stuff. You are. You're on the top shelf stuff. I'm like, oh, okay. Okay, I've never heard of that one before. Can I have this whilst being pregnant? And she was like,
not wait. Wait.
She was like, it's nowhere on your notes that you're pregnant. I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm going to be starting chemo tomorrow at 15 weeks pregnant. So
where was the disconnect?
So she was scrambling. She had to make so many phone calls to find out what was going on. Why was I issued the top shelf stuff when I couldn't have it? I don't remember what they gave me, but it was like, it was good, but it wasn't as good as the top shelf. She was like, this will get you through, basically. I was like, oh, okay, fair enough.
Well, shout out for you. Like, actually, that was your first step in advocating for yourself. Because what if you had just been like, oh, yeah, top shelf, girl.
You know, just blase, just take
beat
it.
Beat me up.
Exactly. So then the next day, coming back in for treatment, I had my PICC line fitted first. That probably took like around an hour. And then again, the same whole situation of speaking to them. Yeah. You know, just breast cancer, this, yeah. So I'm pregnant as well. Oh, we didn't.
I'm so confused why this is not in your chart at this point.
It's not on your notes that you're pregnant. Oh, okay. Cool. Because I'm 15 weeks today. So. Cool.
That's like a big like detail. That is the detail.
That is detail, you know. So having that fitted and then went into the main infusion room. Watch it. I think I was sitting on chair 11, closest to the door. Had some nice space. Had some good retail space in that chair. I had a little desk down at the side. Cranked that chair all the way back. I had a coat hook behind me, so I hooked up my coat.
Yes.
I was living my best life. As best as you can live it whilst you're on the infusion ward. So the nurse comes around. She's asking questions, you know, are you allergic? Are you diabetic? Are you this? Are you that? I'm like, no. And then they get you to fill in this form. I think it's just repeating those same questions, but at least it's there in your file. And then at the end, let me see if I can remember it because I just briefly glanced at it. It said, you know, do you have any questions about your fertility or contraception or something like that? And it's like, yes, no, or NA. So I ticked NA and was like, I'm 15 weeks pregnant.
How does this keep coming up?
Paper, she's like, oh yeah, thanks for filling it out. And you're 15 weeks pregnant. I'm like, yes, today, 15 weeks today. She's like, oh, congratulations. We don't actually have your chemo right now, so we're gonna have to wait.
She didn't know for a minute, but
just congratulations. And I was like, yeah, thank you.
She went back there and cursed somebody out.
I know. She went back to that nurse's station and was like, who sent her up here and didn't fill in the notes? What's going on? So that first day, as much as, you know, everyone was nice and treated me well, just having to repeat, I'm pregnant. It was nowhere to be seen in my notes. I'm just
That's
like,
so. Oh, triggering.
Didn't I speak to the oncologist like 2 weeks ago? Shouldn't that be sent up to you guys in preparation for this appointment?
Did you write a note? Like, did you write like a give any feedback on that?
I think the next time we had an appointment with the oncologist, we were like, what's going on? How come no one knew? How come I was prescribed the wrong medication? And he was just like, oh, well, you know. Anyone that has cancer kind of gets this medication, really. So it's just it just, it comes from wherever to say, if you're going to have cancer treatment, then you have to have this medication. So didn't you send up the notes? I don't, to this day, I don't know why that happened the way it did, but no one knew on that first day that I was pregnant. Absolutely no one.
That's, it's so traumatizing having to repeat multiple times, I'm 15 weeks pregnant. I'm so sorry, like, that happened to you, that you had to, like, continuously repeat that multiple times.
In the same day.
And the same day.
To different people.
Like, are y'all just using, like, stone tablets? Like, why isn't this in, like, why is this not being communicated across a system somewhere? Why am I having to repeat? Mm-hmm. That is a key detail of your case.
So that day was just like a long day because I had to wait for them to send the chemo up. They had 2 out of 3 drugs that I needed, and they were just like, oh yeah, we're waiting on one to come. And I was like, well, I just passed there on the way here. You should have told me. I would have stopped off and picked it up and then came to my appointment with the drugs.
It's not even in the building?
It's not even in the building.
You know, maybe free healthcare isn't what it's meant to be. Because this is sounding...
They had to wait for someone to drive from that area to the hospital, drop off the medication, and then be like, oh, it's here now. Yeah, we can now give you what you need. So that was, I think I was there, honestly, 9 till 5. It was the whole day. The whole day.
Chemo is a 9 to 5 job.
Oh, yeah, it is. When the tea lady came around, I was like, yeah, can I have a cup of tea, a packet of biscuits, a yogurt, cheese, crackers. I'll have some juice as well. 2 juices, please. 1 apple, 1 orange. And yeah, I think that'll be... Oh, do you have sandwiches as well? I'll have a cheese sandwich. Yeah, that'll be all for now. Thank you. Thank you. And then just had all of that whilst I washed down, more steroids, whilst I was waiting. It was a long day, but we persevered. We got through it. And I remember one thing that the nurse who I saw the day before, she was like, the main aim of this is to obviously treat the cancer, but we want you to leave how you came in. So if you feel like, you know, that you're having a reaction or whatever during that process, just let us know, because we don't want you to leave feeling raggedy, basically.
Oh, well, you made me feel raggedy at the beginning when you didn't remember all the stuff, like the very key detail of my case. So if you want me to leave frustrated and angry and annoyed, then you have succeeded. Thank you so much. Give me a cheese sandwich to go, please.
Exactly, to go. But other than that, the day was fine. The day was fine. We got the medication sorted out eventually. And then every single appointment after that, I was like, do you have the other medication, not the one that I'm supposed to be on? So they were like, oh, it says that you're meant to be on this one. Like, no, can't have that whilst I'm pregnant. Oh, you're pregnant. Yes, I'm pregnant. At this point, I would have been 18 weeks for the next one. Yes, I'm pregnant. Okay, so we need to make some calls. So they would phone down pharmacy. Pharmacy would have to phone the oncologist. Obviously, he's in clinic, so that's taking long. It was a process every 3 weeks to get that sorted and just be like, I'm pregnant. I can't have that medication. I need to have the other one, and then wait for someone to sign off on that one. Terrible. Terrible.
That is so terrible. Wild. Big up that org again, because that's a really nice bag.
Ladies really nice fighting shirt. Breast cancer. Hold on. Ladiesfightingbreastcancer.org.uk. You know we're going to reach out to them now. Hey, girl. Yes. Hey, ladies.
Thank you for the intention and for the care.
Yes.
That's huge.
I know.
That's huge.
I know. 100%.
I did get a nice care package from the Georgia Ovarian Cancer Alliance.
Oh, did you?
Yes, they do send cancer care packages for newly diagnosed patients. So also big up to them. So
big up.
There are organizations out there that do this. But I think that should be something that the cancer institutes, at least in the U.S., should do. Like, hey, you have cancer. Here's a nice bag of goodies.
Just because
to make you feel better.
We need, so we just threw everything in there.
Give me some La Roche-Posay.
Exactly. Minimum. Where is the La Roche, please? Where is it? Okay.
Come on. Like, we joke all the time about like the differences in our healthcare systems, mm-mm-mm. you know. But my experience was so, so different. Mm-hmm. It was a really positive experience. And, you know, I'm like, maybe, hey, you go broke getting sick in this country, but like, hey, my chart is up to date. All right. It's up to date. You so, win some, you lose some, you know?
Exactly.
I didn't have to tell you I was pregnant. So like, hey, that's one thing. It's wild. I always had my chemo on a Monday. Mm-hmm. And I remember that very first Monday, I had a friend. She was so sweet and she wanted to help so much. She was like, I'll just drive you to all your treatments. That way your husband can like, you know, get the kids off to mm-hmm. school and he could just meet. And once he comes to relieve me, you know, I'll just take off. So that was so helpful, like having somebody for every treatment. She's not a morning person, but she would be there. My day would start, my chemo, I'd have to always be there about 8:30. And
Early.
And the infusion center is about 25-ish minutes from my house, maybe a little bit longer with traffic. If you're familiar with Atlanta traffic, it is a nightmare. And so the first morning she picked me up, that the first treatment day, about 7:15, she asked me, she's like, do you want anything from Starbucks? And I was like, oh, like a pumpkin loaf. Like, so I'd have a really good, you know, a nice cup of tea and like a pumpkin loaf or banana nut bread. Right before I started. And so I remember my first day, she was having more trouble with it than I was because, so I didn't get a port. And so I had to have like the IV line every mm-mm. single time. So I remember when they ran my line the first time, like she got so squeamish. And I was like, it's okay. It's all right. I got there about 8:30. They ran my line. I'll never forget the two nurses came by and they had this, they kept all of the meds in this like orange Halloween jack-o'-lantern bucket.
Whoa, okay.
Mind you, it's the middle of summer. So they rolled the meds over in the cart. She walked up to me and she was, you know, introduced herself and she was just like, it's your first time. She was like, how are you feeling? And I was like, I feel okay, you know. And so she was just kind of explaining kind of the process and she was like, you know, we're going to give you your pre-meds. We're going to give you, you know, your magnesium is a little low. So we're going to give you a magnesium drip. And then she was like, we'll start with your Taxol. And the Taxol always took, I believe, about 3 or 4 hours. Mm. And then I finished with the carboplatin, which it's wild how I don't remember. This was such a huge part of my life for 6 months. I don't remember the time anymore. I think the carboplatin was like 1 hour or 2 hours. So the day would always start at 8:30 and I wouldn't leave until about 4 because it would always take them. It would take them at least a good hour to like get in, set up, put my armband on. Mm. They would have to like run my line and then they would have to order the meds. By the time they had started my pre-meds, it was probably like 9:30. And the pre-meds always took an hour. But I would just know like, okay, 9:30, I'm going to put on my show while they're like running the pre-meds. So like the first day, I did great. Like it was, I had my pre-meds, I had the Benadryl, I got that Benadryl high.
Yeah.
Ooh. Ooh.
IV Benny.
When the IV Benny hits.
When that hits.
Oof.
Yes.
When it hit the first time, girl, I was like, oh. And I remember I was far from the bathroom the first time.
Oh.
So far. Mm-hmm. Rookie mistake. Rookie. If you happen upon this podcast on this very episode and mm-hmm. you are starting your chemo treatment, take it from us. Get the seat that is closest to the bathroom.
Yeah. You familiarize yourself with the room.
You will thank yourself.
Ask your nurse before she leaves, how can you unclip yourself so you can bring like the drip with you?
Yes.
Figure it out.
Like if you learn nothing else from this podcast.
You won't learn this today.
Find the seat that is closest to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. Like pro tip. So I had picked the farthest seat on my first treatment day. It literally like could not have been farther from the bathroom. And with the fluids running and all of that, it just didn't dawn on me like, oh, like they're like pumping fluids in you. So like, you're probably going to have to pee quite a bit over the course of this day. And so of course I felt the urge to go to the bathroom, like, as soon as they had given me the Benadryl for the first time.
Oh,
I think by that time, like, my husband was there, and I was like, I gotta go to the bathroom. And I'm like laying down, like, I'm vibing. I don't feel like I'm high off of Benadryl at this point. Mm-mm. But when I get up, that was the longest walk to that bathroom. I think I had like my husband on one side, a nurse on the other. There was somebody else getting her chemo, and she was like, baby, you gonna make it? I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna make it. Cause I was stumbling and fumbling to that bathroom on that first day. Mm-mm. That aside, when it was over, they were like, how do you feel? I was like, I feel great. And I went home, went to bed, woke up in the middle of the night and was like cleaning stuff. Like I was so manic. And I remember calling my dad because our chemo schedules were like, I think the same week or something. I was like Monday and he was like Wednesday. And I remember like calling him. And I was like, he's like, how are you feeling? And I was like, I feel great.
Yeah.
It's like better than ever. And he was like, oh, it's those steroids. He was like, it's those steroids. I felt fine that first week. I didn't really start to lose my hair until maybe like 2 weeks into that cycle. And then like my hair just started coming out. And so I just made the decision. I was like, okay, we're just going to cut it and call it a day. So I shaved it off right before my next treatment. And my next treatment, I showed up. They got me together. And I remember about 10 minutes into the Taxol, if even that, like my body just gets warm all over. It just gets warm all over. And my eyes start to like get super watery and red.
Oh my gosh.
I told my husband, something's not right. Something's not right. Mm-mm-mm. And he's like, what's wrong? I was like, something is wrong.
Listen to me.
It is like the entirety of my body is like in flames. Like I am burning. I'm burning up from the inside. And within seconds, like 7 or 8 nurses come running over to me.
Whoa.
And they start pumping me with just vials and vials of Benadryl and steroids. Like they just start like, and I'm just like laying there writhing in pain because like it just feels like my whole body is on fire. So that was the allergic reaction that they were anticipating the first time. And so come to find out a little bit later, because I didn't have it the first time, the nurses were like, she probably gonna have it the second time. So they were like,
they were like,
you think it's very cutesy and demure right now, sis, but
they were like, I see Tiffany coming onto the ward. Yeah. I see her. Can we get 10 CCs, please? Can we get it ready? Thank you.
They came out of nowhere. They were all like, as soon as the Taxol started, I started seeing a bunch of nurses congregate up at the nurse desk.
Oh, yeah. They had their apron on. That's what it is. Apron, the glove. They were getting ready. They were like, we are going in.
We are going in. And they descended on me. I remember the midline nurse was like, you and this baby, y'all are making me a nervous wreck. I was like, I didn't do it. So I had that reaction and I slept the entire day, like the entire treatment. And I remember being very, very nervous because after that treatment, I didn't feel the baby move for like days, for like days. And I was like, what's going on?
What was happening?
Which I was concerned about, but like I wasn't super concerned about because I had also had a surgery and had to be under general anesthesia. So like it was like when he did move for a couple days after that surgery. And so I was like, if he's not moving in like another day, I'm going to call the doctor because I'm getting worried. But then I think that night he started moving. But yes, my treatment, it was pretty paint by numbers. I knew what to expect, especially in those few treatments. As I got to the back half of the treatments, they just started getting, they would start becoming so, so hard on my body. I could not wait until treatment was over because I was postpartum. My body felt different and I just felt so much weaker. And I also felt like when it was just me, once I delivered and I was just doing treatment for myself, it felt like not being pregnant and delivering, it kind of felt like I had lost a bit of like that powerfulness I felt of like, well, I'm fighting for two.
Yes.
It's me and my baby. And then when it was just me, it was like, oh, child, like, girl, like, you sure? Like, sure, girl.
Yeah.
But for me, treatment in itself was just, it was super, it was hard, but the side effects were kind of minimal. Mm. I kind of knew what to expect. And so I knew I would get, did you get neuropathy? You got neuropathy, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah.
My neuropathy started after my second treatment. And so I figured out that the treatments I didn't get my magnesium drip, that's when I would have the worst neuropathy.
Right. Yeah.
So I was like, okay, like, I'll just take a magnesium supplement before I start. And like, I'll, you know, maybe that'll make it a little bit better. And so, yeah, for me, the side effects, I was really just like tired. And I think I was still really hungry at the time. Like I was eating. And did you have any super like major side effects while you were going through it?
I was just down for the count each time. It was as if the just chemo side effects and pregnancy side effects were just the same. Like I remember just not being able to eat due to chemo mouth. Oh my gosh.
You did have chemo mouth real bad. I remember you telling me that.
There was no amount of mouthwash or toothpaste, fluoride, whatever. Nothing could clear that up. It was just terrible. So I wasn't eating because of that. And then when I did eat, it was just coming back. Anyways, Esme was like, no, you're not going to eat that. My craving was Indian food, spicy food. And I'm not really like a spice kind of girl, but I wanted it spicy. And I just remember eating, and then like, wait a minute, wait. I'll be back, guys. Carry on amongst yourselves. I'll be back. And just, Ezzy was just like, you are not going to finish this today. So I'm like, was that chemo? Was that pregnancy? I think it was just a mix of both at that point. They just mirrored each other. And I couldn't tell which one was definitely from the medication and which one was definitely pregnancy.
Well, I don't know what like the rules are in the UK, but like, you know, in the US, you know, the recommendations are you don't drink or smoke or eat deli meat while you're pregnant. Mm-hmm. And we all, I think, for the most part, adhere to that. But did you feel like you had a little less anxiety about like the do's and don'ts of pregnancy once mm-hmm. chemo entered the mix?
Good question, girl. Yeah, I think, you know what? I don't even think I had time to really think about it because I was just trying to figure out what I could eat mm-hmm. and keep down. That was the main thing. So trying to think about whether or not I could eat a runny egg or not, that was the least of my problems. How to figure out whether I could eat yolk that was just leaking out from the toast, whether I could eat an Eggs Benny or not, I couldn't figure that out. I was too busy trying to keep down plain pasta and cheese. No, so no, I didn't have time to think about all that. No.
I threw all that out. I ate raw oysters. We went to New Orleans. I was like, I'm getting these raw oysters. Like, I want raw oysters.
Yeah. Because you're having the chemo. What?
Listen.
What's an oyster going to do?
What's an oyster going to do? I got me a little sub sandwich. Mm-hmm. I'm literally having chemo while pregnant.
I'm having toxic medication.
What is anybody doing? It lowered my anxiety a lot of how much we put on the do's and the don'ts. Because I was just like, I'm just going to indulge in really good food. Disclaimer, I don't recommend. That was just what I did. That's how I coped. Because I was just very much like, if I'm going to be doing this, I'm putting toxic, harmful chemicals in my body. Like, what's a raw oyster? What is it? In the grand scheme of things, like we're already there, or I already have cancer. How much worse can it get?
Just for real, like, you know, like, I can't do no more.
I can't do anymore. I'm going to treat myself. And it really was like raw fish was like the big things. I love sushi so much.
Yeah.
Love sushi so much. And like raw fish, seafood, that was like my big indulgence. And deli meat. Nothing like a good sandwich.
Yes. 100%. Nothing like I remember being pregnant with Ethan. A cheese plowman's?
What's a cheese plowman's? Tell me more.
It's like cheese offs with, is it pickle? Yeah, like a pickle relish type of situation. And it will have a salad on there. The one that I had would have spinach, cucumbers and tomatoes.
Mm.
One, maybe two a day. That'd be my thing. And then as soon as I had him, don't give me a plum and again.
No.
I don't want it.
I don't want it. It tastes
disgusting. I don't want it.
I actually don't like sandwiches, but when I'm with child.
Oh, yes.
Baby. Yeah. Baby. Yeah. A sandwich. A sandwich gonna hit every time.
Every time. Every time.
Every time.
Subway. Subway.
Oh, no, you lost me.
No. Subway for me during pregnancy with Ethan. Wow. I can't believe I paid so much for a sandwich.
How much is Subway? How much is Subway in the UK? Because I know.
They put the prices up due to the whole like VAT situation. Like if you eat in, it's cheaper. And no, if you take it away, it's cheaper. And then if you get it toasted, not toasted, it's a whole VAT situation, whatever was going on there. But Subway, I can't believe how much I spent. But it just hit every time. Every single time.
We should stop saying Subway because they ain't paying us to say Subway.
Yeah. Yeah. So every time I had a sandwich in the shop.
So we've talked about the medical decisions and the physical realities, but the emotional landscape of this time was just as complex.
Definitely. Like, there's this guilt that comes with cancer during pregnancy. And I know I definitely felt it. So, you know, what's your story? What's your take on that?
I mean, it's hard. Like, there wasn't any, like, guilt associated with that because, I mean, I didn't ask to have cancer. Like, it wasn't, like, that really wasn't mine to own, you know? So I didn't have any guilt or shame around that piece of it. Mm. But in terms of, like, the people who were very close to me and in my life, there is the emotional pieces of it, of just how it was impacting my son and my husband and my family, you know, and even thinking about it now, it's like, there's not a lot of guilt associated, but there's like a lot of grief associated with that time. Mm-hmm. The year that I was sick was also the last year of my dad's life. And so I really, really have had a hard time reconciling that of just, yes, we had this very unique experience together where we were both sick at the same time. I would not recommend that. It sounds like, that's so poetic. I don't recommend it. No. I don't recommend it. No. But it's something that we were able to share together and bond over, and you know, being able to talk to him, you know, every other day in what would end up being his last year of life is something that I will cherish forever. Mm-hmm. But I also hate that the last year of his life was spent with me being sick and both of us being sick, and also not being able to have yet another normal pregnancy. That's also the big thing is my first pregnancy was in COVID, and then this was supposed to be my normal, you know, out there, people could actually see my belly pregnancy. And so to have yet another pregnancy kind of hijacked by a side mission, that's something I do struggle with a lot. I struggle with it a lot of kind of coming to terms with that. Mm. But how about you?
I think I just definitely felt like a burden going through that time. And that's what makes me feel like guilty about that whole situation. Aaron took off time off work and just sorted out the house, sorted out where Ethan was gonna go. So even like those things, I just felt like a burden in every way, physically, emotionally, financially. And there's the way how, like yourself, when you said, you know, the way how people just showed up, it's like I can never repay those people back in whatever way it looks like repayment. And the same to Aaron as well. Like I can't repay him in what would make sense for what he's done for me and for Ethan and for keeping the house running. And that still sits with me because it's like, I just want him to know and other people to know that like, I didn't need to have cancer in order to feel like I should appreciate people more, you know?
Mm.
I shouldn't have to wait until such a life-changing experience happens for me to lean on people and ask for help and just talk to people in general. So yeah, still kind of working through that whole thought process of what that feels like and how to kind of move forward. Yeah, just the guiltiness of just being, having other people as a caregiver. And, mm-hmm. you know, people can be like, oh yeah, well, I know this person who had cancer. But unless you're there 24/7 with that person, I'm sure Chris will probably have the same experience with you as well. No one knows what it's like until you're in mm-hmm. that moment. So yeah, just, it feels hard to kind of go through that motion. And even with Ethan as well, he was so young at the time. He was only, I think he was maybe 15 months when I was diagnosed. So I kind of take for granted how young he was, because I never had to explain what was going on. He just went to his aunties. He went with granddad. He went with nanny. He went with aunties and uncles, you know. It's only now that he's older. It's only when I was having radiotherapy, actually. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going now. And I never really explained where I was going. But he was like, oh, mommy, you're going to the hospital. I'm like, yeah, I'm going. So now, like, he'll say, like, oh, you know, mommy, you might have to go to the hospital again. I'm like, no, I don't need to go anymore now. It's okay. And I just think, what did you pick up? What? Because I haven't had that conversation with him. So I'm just, what did he hear?
They're so perceptive.
I know. And as much as you try to keep them in a bubble about the whole situation, I know I definitely did. Mm-hmm. Try to keep him in a bubble. It's like, he still picked up on things.
Yeah.
Gosh, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, Sammy would, you know, because you're going to the doctor on a chemo week at least 3 or 4 times a week. You got to get your labs. You got to get the chemo. Then you got to get the follow-up. And you got, you know, like, you're going to the doctor often. And so I do remember at one point, Sammy, he kind of clocked that I was, anytime I would leave the house, because at that time, that was really the only time I would really leave the house, is to either go to treatment or go do my labs, because they didn't want me outside too much, you know? And it was, I remember one day he was just like, mommy, you're going to the doctor. So anytime I would leave, he would just always ask me if I'm going to the doctor. And so I just think they're just so perceptive of what's happening. And it's interesting you say that, you know, you felt like a burden. I do think I kind of echo that sentiment as well, because it is, Chris was just so incredible, like selfless through the whole thing. And even though I could see that it was wearing on him, like mentally and physically, and trying to keep the house up, keep Sammy occupied, make sure Sammy was where he needed to be, you know, working a full-time job where he had to be on campus teaching classes. Nobody really talks about how, like, yes, we're the ones kind of experiencing the thing, but caregivers are just so like wonderful and hands down, you know, just like the best. And I'm so thankful that he landed where he is work-wise, because, you know, he works with someone who was also a caregiver for their late husband, and their family just really rallied around us immediately. Like, they were the ones that got a meal train started for us and, you know, made sure we had hot meals and made sure we had food. And so I've tried. I can never repay those people ever. Like, anybody, like I will spend the rest of my life repaying those people for their, like, basic kindness. I did. I just feel like there's so much revolving around me that just feels burdensome. Like, I feel like I am being a burden, but nobody ever made me feel that way. Like, ever.
No.
Like, and everyone was just like, we want to help. Like, let us help.
Yeah.
What can we do? Like, I had a friend fly in after the baby was born and stayed for a week, you know, cleaned my house, you know, and took my kid to school. And It was such a special time, a hard time, but a really, really special time that even now, like as difficult as it was, there are pieces of it that I look back on because I'm just like, wow, like people just really showed such a genuine kindness to me and my family that I will never, ever be able to repay. Did you ever like find yourself feeling oddly grateful for the pregnancy? Because I sometimes think I'm having the baby depending on me forced me to take care of myself in ways that I might have neglected otherwise.
Absolutely. You know, there was no option to fall apart. You know, there's another life that's just depending on you to keep going. And that's what you have to do. Keep going. Looking back at that time of treatment whilst pregnant, what unexpected wisdom did you gain?
Ooh, I mean, I would say like, I'm so much stronger than I ever thought I was. And it's not really wisdom, I guess, but it is just, it's, I guess, an affirmation for me. Getting cancer is like one of the things that really terrified me the most because I knew I was always high risk for it. And I never knew how I would confront it if it were to happen. And this experience in this treatment, especially, that was the piece I was so terrified of, just watching my mom go through it and my sister go through it. And yeah, it was just the affirmation and the confirmation that like, I am stronger than I think, you know, it felt so difficult going through it, but the perspective I gained has just been so clear, you know, like really wanting to work to find what my purpose is. And to leave something behind for my children have just become super to the forefront. Like it is like legacy or nothing at all for me.
Yes.
Because like when you're that close and when you're confronting, you know, am I going to be here? Am I not going to be here? Like when it's like in your face, it really kind of brings everything into focus. And so I don't think it was unexpected wisdom, but it really, for me, it was, there is still more for you to do. So you need to figure out what that is and do it.
Yes. Yeah.
What about you?
I think for me, it's just, it's giving me a sense of, I just need to believe in myself, believe that I can do the things. I just need to believe that I can do it. You know, I'm very much a person who I'll have an idea and it will just kind of die down. I'll just be like, well, you know, it didn't really get off the paper. So I'll just leave it as that. But, you know, doing this podcast is testament to the fact that I am able to achieve better things. And I need to explore the untapped potential I have within myself to be able to get to the next steps, elevate, progress, transform, any other similes that I can fit in there, you know, to get to that next level. So that's what this has given me. Yeah.
Like, we want the listeners to take away from this show that it's okay to hold space for both the terror and the wonder simultaneously. It's okay. You can dream what it looks like after the storm.
Yes. And also, you know, advocating for yourself and your baby is not just important, it's essential.
Even if you tell somebody 16 times that you're 15 weeks pregnant, like, I cannot. No. I'm gonna write a letter.
Please.
Next week, we're gonna talk about the culmination of this journey, giving birth while in the midst of cancer treatment, the joy and complexity of welcoming our children while still fighting for our lives.
Until then, be gentle with yourselves, and this is Everything After.
Click!
Yeah!